welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, an exclusive home of the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff. I'm kind of out of my mind because I keep fantasizing that I'm Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, sometimes Bing Crosby. I think I have crooner virus. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Crooner virus. That's a good one. And the laughs just keep on coming. Duff's keeping busy. Even though the start of the Guns N' Roses tour has been postponed, he's doing a radio show now for Sirius XM, much like me. My show's called The Rock of Jericho. It's on every Friday night. His is called Three Chords and the Truth, and it's on Ozzy's Boneyard, which is Channel 38. Check it out Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. Check out The Rock of Jericho on Sirius XM Octane, Friday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern. Duff does a lot of encores as well. Just follow Duff on the Twitter at Duff McKagan to see when you can hear it next. And be sure to check out my new show, The Saturday Night Special. Tomorrow night on Facebook Live, every Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Come hang out, ask some questions, hear some stories. We're going to sing some songs together. It's going to be a good time. We did the first one last week and got 250,000 people checked it out. So I appreciate I was able to give you guys a little bit of entertainment, even though you're locked down at home. So check it out. Facebook Live tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern. It's the Saturday Night Special. So let's hashtag stay home together, practice social distancing, and help beat COVID-19 and have a few laughs and a little fun in the meantime and in between time. And then when all this is done, when we beat COVID-19 this summer, hopefully we can get back on track with Fozzy on the road. Save the World Tour has been postponed and restarts in July. FozzyRock.com has all the rescheduled dates and ticket info. If you already have a ticket, hang on to it, and you can use it at one of these new rescheduled dates. Hopefully you can make the new date. If not, you can get a refund. But as of today, July 10th is when we get back on the road in Columbus. July 11th, Grand Rapids. 13th, Indianapolis. 16th, Rockfest. 30th, in Harrison, Ohio. 31st in Flint, and then we continue on through August and some shows in September before we hit the Kiss Cruise on October 30th. All ticket information at FozzyRock.com. We're also doing the patented Fozzy VIP meet and greets, so come hang out with us before the show. We do private mini concert for you. Take pictures, sign autographs. It's a great time. One of the best VIP experiences you will ever experience. You can get those tickets as well at FozzyRock.com. So go check that out. And get ready to have some fun when COVID is done. And we're going to have some fun today. My friend and former WWE referee and Fozzy road crew member Marty Elias is here. He was the referee for one of my favorite matches of all time. Actually, probably my favorite match of all time. And that's saying a lot because I've seen a lot of matches. Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25, Reliant Stadium in Houston, Texas. It happened on April 5th, 2009, and here we are 11 years later. We're going to revisit that match. We're going to do a watch-along with Marty. Here's some of the great behind-the-scenes stories of putting the match together, to some of the spontaneous things that happened in the ring, to the overall spectacle of WrestleMania and the greatest match of all time. Marty's also talking about what went down between him and WWE that led to his exit from the company just a few months after this historic match. All the information, all the facts. You're going to hear everything about it. Let's get to it now, right here on Talk is Jericho. Okay, so I'm here with Marty Elias, Marty Rubacabla.
Marty Rubachakla.
Were you Rubacabla in WWE?
No, I was Marty Elias.
Then why do I know he's Marty Rubacabla?
Because that was my real name.
Yeah.
Marty Elias is now my legal name, though.
Oh, you changed it?
I changed it, yeah.
What are you, Gorgeous George or something?
Of course.
Who was the other guy? The Maestro? Like, you actually changed his name to the Maestro?
Yeah, he changed the Maestro.
No, Maestro bought Gorgeous George from whoever and now changed his name to actually Gorgeous George.
Yeah, you know, it's like Warrior. He was Warrior.
He was Warrior, yeah.
He wasn't Jim Hellwig anymore.
You've denied the Rubacabla fortune to become Marty
Elias.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But yeah, we've obviously been good friends for a long time and always trying to think of ideas for the podcast and that sort of thing. So yeah. What I thought would be a great idea is, when people ask me a lot of times, What's your favorite match you ever, or what's your favorite match you've ever seen? And I always say Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker, WrestleMania 25. And the referee in that match was you.
Was me, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be kind of cool to go back and talk about that match and just how monumental it was, and for so many reasons why a match like that, we're never, ever going to see something like that again. But so tell me a little bit. So how long had you been working for the WWE at this point in time? Because it's from April 5th, 2009, WrestleMania 25, and that's the one that was at Reliant Stadium in Houston, Texas.
Yes, it was. I had been with the company for about 3.5 years at that time. And I, you know, of course, knew Sean and, you know, would talk to him. And one of my goals when getting into the business, I always wanted to work a WrestleMania with Shawn Michaels. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mr. WrestleMania, I mean, the icon, the showstopper. I mean, if you're going to reach for the sky, man, reach up there, man. So that was my goal, was to do that. And Sean and I had conversations, and I know that he was really contemplating retiring around that time. And I told him, I said, you know, the window's getting smaller for the opportunity to work with you. So if there's ever an opportunity, I mean, you know, it would be great. And all he told me, he's like, well, let's work on that. And that's all he said and left it at that. And then I want to say,
because you had worked with us a few times in our feud that we had the year before in 2008. I remember one for sure. Was it the one where he was bleeding?
The Great American Bash, where blood is now banned from WWE.
From that, I remember you were in that match.
I was in that, you know. And matter of fact, I remember being in Mexico City when you had told me that the angle was starting and you wanted somebody to be there. And you said, do you want to be a part of it? And I said, absolutely. And you said, well, go talk to Sean about it because we're going to need somebody reliable. And I went and talked to Sean. And Sean says, are you down for it? And I go, absolutely. So he said, all right, we'll see what we can do. And I happened to be in quite a few of the matches. You know, the unsanctioned match was another one that we did.
Right.
Which was amazing, you know. So, and it was
You're a very reliable guy to have in the ring. I always liked having you in there because, you know, the best refs are guys that you don't even realize they're there until you need them there.
Absolutely.
You're good for that. Charles Robinson, good for that. Kyoto, if you're talking about WWE referees, those are always the three guys that I always want to have. And it's funny, after you left, and then Kyoto maybe been on another show or something, now there's a bunch of refs that I don't even really know.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of get like kind of a little bit timid and act a little bit scared. But you guys were never like that. You were where you needed to be, which is why you're using so many of these big matches.
Yeah, and the thing is too, you know, we have a job to do. And if we're not doing our job, you can't do your job. And the last thing that the boys like yourself need to be worrying about is somebody messing up a match for you and stuff, you know. So I always went in there with the mentality that I was going to be the greatest referee for you guys, and you guys were going to kick ass and take names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty much my mentality.
Was there ever any time that, how long had you been reffing at that point when you got into the WWE?
I had been doing it for almost 15 years by that point.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just in California?
Just in California, doing Japan, doing Mexico. I went to go work for 01 in Hashimoto. In Japan in 2000, I went and I toured Japan for 2 weeks with Hashimoto at 01.
Is that because they were based in California? They had a dojo in California or something?
No, through Rick Bassman and UPW. Oh. You know, he was doing a lot of stuff with 01 and Pride and stuff. So Nakamura, who was booking for 01 at that time, came out and was looking for some guys. And I just happened to go down and I refereed for 10 hours straight. And he was looking for four guys and he took three guys and he took me. And he pulled me aside. He goes, Mari-san, you work very hard. You no complain. You work. I take you. And I went, thank you. So, hard work, man.
So you've done that in Mexico and kind of around the scene. How did you end up getting into WWE?
I actually tried out for WCW in 96.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Irvine, they did a spot house show at the Irvine College, City College there. And I went, I did a dark match. It was Juventud Guerrero against a local guy. I did that. And then I did some security work for ECW when they did their pay-per-view out here. And with WWE, I did dark matches. And this is something that I'm going to reveal here, too, is that I did dark matches for WWE in 96 and 97 in New York, New Haven, Connecticut, and NASA Coliseum. I was a manager. I was called Mr. Ruby.
Really?
Yeah. Did it with Paul Roma. Paul Roma and a buddy of his, they were called the Pretty Primos. And they needed a manager, so I knew Paul. I'm actually godfather to Paul's daughter.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Mr. Ruby.
Mr. Ruby. And looking back on it, man, I was so green. I had no clue about the business. And of course, I had been in maybe 2 years, 3 years at that point, and went out there and did that. But the real funny part about that whole thing is I went out there not knowing it was a dark match and what dark matches are. And I quit my normal corporate job because I was going to work for WWF. Big mistake, people.
Right. So did you finally have a tryout as a ref to get in? Or?
Yeah, I did. I actually had my first referee tryout in 1999 at the Honda Center, Arrowhead Pond. And I remember when I came back after the match, Earl Hebner was in Gorilla, and he says, "Your counts are too damn fast." And he walked away. And I went, "Okay, thanks for the advice." Mm-hmm. So, so that was my first time doing that. And then I actually got called to do a bunch of live event stuff that was just random stuff. They would need somebody in Bakersfield. They would need somebody in San Diego or L.A. And they would call me up and say, "Hey, man, well, you want to come work a match at a live event? One of our referees couldn't make it." "Sure, man." So I went. I did a lot of that stuff for WWF at the time. So I was lucky, you know, to get those calls because I would hound them all the time. I remember calling J.J. Dillon. I remember calling Jim Ross. And then Johnny Ace ultimately called me one time because I was calling WWE and sending emails constantly. And Johnny Ace called me ultimately. He goes, "Hey, kid, you got to stop calling us. We know who you are. Just leave it alone." I was, "All right."
"Well, if you want me to stop calling you,
give me a job.
Give me a job."
Yeah.
"Then, well, then how'd you finally get the job?"
I actually cut a promo on Johnny Ace. And it was Monday Night Raw. I showed up because, you know, back then, you could just show up with your bags, remember?
Yeah.
You could just show up.
Guys would be hanging on backstage
absolutely.
All the time.
There was no list. There was no nothing like right. You could just show up with your bags, man. And it's funny because nowadays people tell me how difficult it is. And I go, "Dude, we just walked in." So I was at a Monday Night Raw. Wanted to talk to John. And John blew me off, you know, like he's blown off a lot of people.
Right.
And he says, "Get me a Doors." Doors opened and I never seen him. So I went to Tommy Dreamer, who was working in the office at the time. And I said, "Hey, Tommy," I said, "is it cool if I go to San Diego?" He goes, "Yeah." He's like, "You can go hang out, but you know, you can eat catering, but you're not going to get paid for anything." I said, "That's all I need, dude." So I went down there and I checked in with Timmy White. And I said, "If there's anything that changes, just let me know." He goes, "All right, kid, no problem." So I went down there, and this is when the Batista-Booker T thing happened, that fight at the SummerSlam commercial. So everything was chaotic backstage, and I see Johnny walking by himself down a hallway, and he's got the script. And I said, "John," I said, "do you got a minute?" And he says, "What do you want?" And I said, "I'd like to talk to you." And he goes, very sarcastically, puts the paper behind his back, and he leans over, and he goes, "What do you have to tell me?" And I proceeded to cut a promo on him, and I told him, you know, it was very profanity-laced, and I told him, I said, "Look," I said, "you need to give me an effing job because I'm that good." I said, "And if you don't," I said, "it's going to be your fault when I go work for somebody else." I said, "I'm an asset. I'm bilingual." I said, "I'm the best." I said, "You will never have an issue with me." I said, "because everybody loves my work." I said, "and if you don't take that opportunity to do it, you're going to be the guy who didn't sign Marty Elias." Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and he walks me over to Sarge and Timmy White at the table. And he goes, "Sarge, give Marty a dark match. I want to see what he can do." So they gave me a dark match. It was Funaki and Rene Dupree. Funaki beat him with the crossbody out of the corner. Mm-hmm. And they gave me a SmackDown shirt. Johnny pulled me aside afterwards. He goes, "We'll be in touch, kid." So Timmy paid me my $200 draw. Draws, people go, "What a draw."
Yeah, you know? That's when back in the day you could go get an advance on your money. So does anybody need a draw? You'd get your $200. And sometimes everyone would always take the $200 because back in those days, that might be the only money you got for the show.
Absolutely. And you know, there was times that was the only money that you got.
Right.
And you know, it was funny because you survived on that. Mm-hmm. You really did. And a lot of guys today don't have that luxury.
And frugalness, a.k.a. eating food off a old plate of room service outside somebody's door.
Absolutely, man. You scrounge through those, man.
That's right.
You know, with five guys in one room.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Somebody on the box spring when you take the mattress off.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so I cut that promo on Johnny. He gave me that dark match. And then about 2 weeks later, Tommy called me up and says, "Hey, you know, Johnny wants to offer you a job, but would you be willing to do it?" And I said, "Yeah." But before that, Howard Finkel had called me because they wanted to test me out. You know the way they are, the mm-hmm. way they test people out all the time. So Howard Finkel called me, and I was working at my normal shoot job, and my phone was ringing, and this voice comes on and says, "Hello, may I please speak to Marty Rubakovla?" I was like, "Yeah, speaking. Marty, this is Howard Finkel.
Can I speak to Marty Rubakovla?"
Speaking on behalf of John Laurinaitis, WWE. And I went, "Yeah, all right." I was like, "Okay, who's ribbon?"
Right.
And he's like, "Marty, you know, we would like you to come out and help us out in Rochester, New York." And I went, "Okay." I said, "Who's ever messing with me?" I said, "That's a good one." Click, hung up.
No.
Hung up on
that. Happens so often that people don't realize it. You know that Zach Wilde did that to Sharon when she first called him about
really?
The gig? Yeah.
But, dude, you know, in the business, the way things are, you just don't know, man.
Some guy like Gallows does a perfect Howard Finkel, reel you right in there. You would never know it wasn't him, right?
And Matt Stryker does a great Johnny Ace, too.
Okay,
so.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought somebody was ribbing me, so I hung up on him. And about 10 minutes later, my phone rings again. "Marty, this is Howard Finkel. You know, we have an opportunity for you to come out to Rochester, New York, and help us out on Monday Night Raw." And I went, "Yeah, okay, whatever." And I hung up on him again.
Twice. Jeez Louise.
And, you know, because, dude, you just never know, especially in this business. You just don't know who's ribbing, who's not. And finally, he called me a third time, and I said,
"Did you ever say this is really Howard Finkel? Don't hang up."
I said, "Howard, I said, if this is really you, I said, you know, I said, can you confirm it for me?" He goes, "Are you standing by a fax machine?" And I went, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, give me the fax number, and I will fax you over details right now. I'll stay on the phone." So I went, "Yeah, okay, cool." So gave him the number. He faxed me. The fax started coming through. I seen the WWE letterhead, and then I went, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." I said, "Howard, okay, yeah, you just know, I understand completely, you know, so."
Right.
He got it.
So then you're in, and like we said, you wrestled quite a few matches, main headlining matches, and we're going to start getting to actually watching Taker and Shawn here. What do you remember about the buildup to this match, both from a storyline, but more importantly, behind the scenes?
I remember people were excited about it because Shawn and Taker had that Hell in the Cell match that put Hell in the Cell on the map. And I know that everybody was excited because this was literally the first time that they were going to go one-on-one without any type of...
And the Hell in the Cell was when Shawn fell off the side of the cage.
Yes.
And Kane came out. Kane ripped the door off.
Yes.
The debut of Kane.
It's kind of
the forgotten... Pioneer Hell in the Cell, because everyone just remembers Mick and Taker.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the precursor to that, with at the time a super crazy bump, was Shawn falling off the side of the cage.
Yeah, on the table.
Yes, on the table, which then made Mick decide to take it one step further and go off from the top of the cage.
Yeah.
But Shawn was kind of the first daredevil bump in a Hell in the Cell.
Yeah, and then, you know, the whole debut of Kane, and then, you know, Shawn going over in that match, and, you know, just the whole blood and just everything else. I mean... That was, I think, the only time that people had really got to see those two do their thing. And then the fact when they did the Royal Rumble thing, the casket match, when Shawn got hurt, that was a whole Taker match, too. And, you know, Shawn was
right.
for three or four years.
Yeah. He broke his back on the bump on the side of the casket and all that stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, back then it wasn't a normal casket. It was one of those wooden crates. You know, it's really just
like a box, yeah, a coffin.
So you know, they hadn't got to do anything, and I know that match actually happened on accident because Shawn was the one who, you know, said, "Well, I'll just wrestle Taker," and it was like it just started becoming what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the buildup to it was amazing backstage because everybody knew it was going to be something, but people just didn't know that it was going to be what it is. And what it turned out to
me, the reason why I mentioned earlier it's something that can never happen again is because you had two guys with basically 20-year storied careers, both at the top level. I'm not going to say they're at the top of their games, but Shawn was pretty damn good at that point in time, as was Taker. Maybe they were at the top of the games, and if they weren't at the top, it was very close to it. But more importantly, like I said, these two giant names that had never really touched, besides the Hell in the Cell, but you kind of forgot about that. You'll never get to see that again. Like two iconic guys that have been kept apart for basically 20 years in the same company. Like that's insane to even think about now.
Yeah. And you know, oddly enough that guys today won't be able to work with guys like that.
Right.
You know, and it's sad because you have guys who are veterans and things of that nature, but you're not going to have guys like these two who really just set the bar for everything that's wrestling related, you know,
as gimmicks, as characters.
Yes.
heels, baby faces. They could do both so well. But let's just start the match, and you can tell me some of the background of it and that sort of thing as we go, because this is a long match, and this was not even the main event of WrestleMania.
It was supposed to be third, and we only had 15 minutes. When we were putting the match together the Thursday before, Michael Hayes and Pat Patterson were the agents. This match was third, and we only had 15 minutes.
So, okay, well, first of all, were you privy to how they got it changed? Because I can imagine right now how Sean got it changed.
Absolutely, I can tell you. I remember sitting there, and Taker and Sean just looked at each other, and Taker rubs his goatee, and he goes, "Sean, how long you been with this company?" Sean's like, "Pretty long, maybe half my life." And he goes, He goes, "You know what? I've been with this company longer than some of my ex-wives." He goes, "We got 15 minutes." Sean's like, "Oh, I could go on first and do the dark match so I get out of there early." And Taker's like, "This ain't going to fly." And Michael Hayes, "Whoa, I'll go talk to Vince. I'll get a change. And within 20 minutes, came back, and we had 30 minutes.
This is day of the show?
No, this was Thursday.
A couple days before.
Yeah, Thursday.
Right. So, because I'm looking at the card here, and it's like, you know, Colognes versus Morrison and The Miz, Punk versus Christian, Finlay, Hornswoggle, Money in the Bank ladder match, you know, that shit. Santino Marella, Miss WrestleMania Battle Royal, Jericho versus Snuka, Steamboat, Piper, Matt Hardy versus Jeff Hardy, Mysterio versus Layfield, Taker, Shawn, Cena, Big Show, Edge, Triple H, Orton. Hey, all due respect to Cena, Big Show, Edge, and Triple H and Orton, the main event of this show is Undertaker and Shawn Michaels.
I got some good tidbits, too, when we watched this about Taker and Cena and Triple H after the match.
Well, that's what we want to hear. So,
yeah.
Like I said, it's a long match. It's an epic. It's from Houston.
I'm going to pull the curtain back, guys.
Well, that's what we're here for. The curtain is going to be pulled back. Put it on for yourself and watch along with us, with Marty, who was in the ring as the third man. So once again, nobody builds up a match like the WWE does as far as the packages and all that stuff.
Amazing.
And I think once again, it was almost like a icon versus icon type of a thing.
You know, they built this up so well, you know, because people actually wanted to see this.
Yeah.
I mean, people were starving to see this, and the buildup for it was just amazing because they kept teasing everything. I mean, Sean would attack Taker. Taker would attack him. Sean would provoke him. And the stuff that we did even in El Paso when Sean came out wearing the all white, Taker came up from underneath.
And by the way, guys, if you want to watch this, just Google Taker versus HBK WrestleMania 25, and you'll be right with it. You have to catch up a little bit. I missed my cue as far as when to start it, but we're in the packages right now. So put it on for yourself and watch along with us. It's funny. We had that a couple times. Our WrestleMania match, me and Sean, we went, I think, 25, and we only had like 20 or 21. And I remember we came through the curtain, and Michael Hayes was there, and he was like, "Guys went long." And Sean was like, "Hold on. After a masterpiece like that, the first thing you're going to tell me is that we went too long?" He goes, "Go have a 5-star match first, then come back and talk to me. Get the fuck out of here." And I was like, that's the old Sean right there a little bit.
Yeah,
but he was right.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, Vince would always say, you know, I remember it's a Bubba Ray story, but it fits where Bubba went long on TV or something. And he came back and Vince was like, "If you ever go 5 minutes over on my TV show again, it better be as good as that last match was."
Yeah.
You know, this is what we do. When you have a great match, that's why we're putting in the time and doing this. And also, too, I find for WrestleMania, everybody wants to have the best match.
Yeah.
But only certain matches are designated with story and time to have the best match. Yeah. Going back on that list that I just read, it's definitely this match, Taker and Shawn, and it's, you know, Hunter and Triple H and Orton.
And Orton, yeah.
You know, those are big money matches. My match against Snuka and Piper, and it was a gimmick that couldn't have went more than 6 or 7 minutes.
Those guys couldn't go there.
They could. Steamboat could. And thankfully, it was good. He was in the match, but but that's why it's like this match should have had every moment of the 30 minutes. So tell me what you're feeling right now before you're going through the curtain watching these packages backstage in gorilla position.
I'll let you know in a secret. Me and Sean were sitting watching this, and Sean, for the finish, see, I'm pulling back the curtain big time here, dude. Wouldn't do it for anybody else, but I'm doing it for you.
So, it's been 10 years. Statute of limitations is over.
Yeah. So pulling back the curtain. So the original finish was the moonsault. But when we were walking through the match, Sean couldn't hit the moonsault.
What do you mean? What was I don't remember the moonsault. I haven't seen this match since this 2009.
Yeah, see, that's Corpus Christi right there.
When Sean came out dressed all in white.
All in white.
Yeah, yeah, so you're watching that. So all the smoke's in there. So you were involved in the setup of that?
Yeah, I was involved in the setup of that, setting up the ring for Taker to come up and stuff. That was El Paso, Texas.
Gotcha. So what moonsault are you referring to?
The finish of the actual WrestleMania 25 match.
Moonsault to where Taker catches him.
Tombstone.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
So, but the thing is, Sean couldn't hit the moonsault to save his life.
He couldn't hit it to where Taker would catch him.
Taker would catch
him. Now, let me just say, that is very hard to do. I tried that for years. I tried it with Goldberg, as a matter of fact, with the lion salt, which is only from the second rope. Mm-hmm. Sean doing it from the top gives you a little bit more height, but also a lot more momentum and speed coming over.
Going towards him.
Yeah.
And Sean was going to the left. He was going under. He was going over, you know, so he couldn't hit it. So we actually brought in some crash pads and stuff and everything, and he was still going off to the side and everything. So he goes, you know what, let's do a plan B. He goes, if I don't hit the moonsault, I'm going to land on my feet, Taker will kick me, pull me up, boom. So we're in Gorilla, and we're talking and stuff, and Sean and I always prayed, you know, we pray before you go out and stuff. So we prayed, and we're sitting there, and he's adjusting his hat and stuff. So I go, we still on with plan B? And he turns and looks at me, he goes, we're not going to need a plan B. And at that moment, I knew that HBK, the showstopper, was in the house.
Look at this entrance, too. Sean always had cool ring entrances for Mania. He's up all, like, elevated. He's like an angel, a cowboy angel coming down from the heavens.
The light.
It's like a very Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley, cherry-picky looking thing. Mm-hmm. Like that. I never had a big entrance at WrestleMania. That's why when we had Double or Nothing this year, I finally had a cool entrance. Yeah. I was like, it's about time, you know? But yeah, that's one thing when you're talking about when you're trying to practice something like a moonsault catching, that's not something you can really practice.
No.
You're not adrenaline enough. He's not adrenaline enough. When it's time and you get one shot, like you said, the showstopper.
Yeah.
When I worked with Sean at WrestleMania, the spot was I was going to do a nip up, then do a super kick. I hadn't done a nip up since I was 19 years old, 20 years old. I practiced it 100 times and like I'd get it 7 times out of 10, 8 times out of 10. I was so nervous about it. When the time came, I hit that motherfucker straight up on my feet, man.
Check this out. I love this little subtle thing that he does. The guys today who don't know how to work don't get these little subtle things.
What does he do?
Look back.
Oh, very cool. It's a big, long ramp in the stadium, and Sean's looking behind him because Taker might come from behind.
You just don't know.
Yeah.
It's those little subtle things that just make that whole thing just make
sense. You know who does that really good is Okada.
Yeah.
When we just did this little feud thing, there was a video that I had on the screen where it was done. He looked right behind him like, oh, he's going to come behind me.
Yeah.
Those are just little things make good workers great.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And with him doing that, I mean, right there, it just told a huge story. You know, you just don't know, especially with the dead man.
Yeah, exactly. Now, was this... So this was the next year, there was the rematch.
It was the rematch.
Was that Sean's last match?
Sean's last match.
That's until the Saudi Arabia.
Until the Saudi Arabia thing.
I didn't like that. I didn't like he came back bald and stuff. It's like, I didn't want to see that.
I watched it, and I really wish I would have been there. You know, but hey, man, right now at this point, I'm in the ring and I'm just getting in the zone, man. I'm just getting in the zone. And you know, it's working with guys like this, working with guys like yourself, Chris, is that you get elevated without even attempting to get elevated. It's just like your game and everything just steps up because the adrenaline, the crowd, the TV. I mean, you're in WWE. You're working with Shawn Michaels, Jericho, Taker. You know, you get elevated without even really...
Right, just being in the ring with those guys.
And guys like yourself, Shawn and Taker, I mean, I enjoyed working with you guys because you guys just made me better at what I did. And it just made me elevate everything that I did.
Well, you're a professional, too. And once again, like if... You know, it's just part of the business. Sometimes you're in the opening match, and sometimes you're in a match that means something, and sometimes you're in a match that has the possibility to be legendary, and you are out there with these guys. Now, explain how you feel when you hear that Undertaker gong and the lights go out.
Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Goosebumps, man. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because you could feel the electricity. Mm. I mean, I'm sure that's a cliche, but you could feel the electricity in that arena, that stadium. You could feel it and just feeding off of the crowd. It was almost like it was almost suffocating where it's just, it's so intense. And then, of course, with him coming out, I mean, their two entrances alone would be a main event on any card. Yeah,
this could be the end of the show right here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, when that light goes out and you hear the gong, I always call it the Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Bong. It's a feeling that you don't experience for any other wrestler coming to the ring. And I only worked with Taker a handful of times, but every single one of them, I remember the first time I worked with him, believe it or not, was in Puerto Rico in like 2008 after I'd been there for 8 years. And when that light went on a house show, just like, oh my gosh, and just watching him come out, talk about, you know, the big league performer. This guy knows his character better than anybody who's ever had a character. Absolutely. He knows exactly what it is. Also, let me say that this has been a forgotten thing over the last few years, but this was in the middle of the Taker streak.
Yes.
I think he's 16-0
right here. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's another thing. And back in those days, you didn't even need a title on the line. A Taker streak was a championship.
Yeah.
And every false finish was treated as such.
Yeah. And you know what? It's great because even though people know Taker won, nobody really gave a shit of who was going to win this match because it was going to be that match and what it was. And even though Taker did win, but people remember this match because it is the match of...
And once those, that's why big matches are big matches. You didn't know who was going to win. And in this case, there is no winner and loser.
No.
If it's a great match, both guys win, you know? So as the ref in there, what do you know as far as what's going to go on in the match? Obviously, you know the finish. Do you know anything else that you're supposed to remember or not remember? Or?
No, the only thing that I was given instruction, Taker gave me instruction, was that if he didn't get back after the dive, to shoot, count him out. That was the only instruction that I was given.
If you didn't get back?
If he didn't get...
If he didn't get
if
back
If he didn't in. Get back in after the dive. And when we see the dive, I'll go into some other tidbits that people didn't
know. And I'm
going
to tell you what happened on my end when that dive happened, because it's ugly.
Yeah.
Very bad.
So, yeah. And with that being said, the only thing I was given instruction was by Taker. And he said, if I don't make it back in, if I'm out there, you shoot, count me out. And I said, no problem, boss. You know, when Taker speaks, you listen.
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely. You know, like Taker's the godfather. I mean, you know, I was actually with him in November. You know, he did a signing out here. And I was out there. I went out there and hung out with him and helped out with
the signing.
Where was the signing? Frankincense.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I went and I hung out with him. The promoter called me and asked me if I wouldn't mind coming out and helping him out and stuff. So I went and hung out. And you know what really is humbling to me is that he told me that this match was probably his finest hour.
Mm.
And for him to say that with his career and who he is, I mean, it gave me goosebumps, man, because this is Undertaker telling me this. And he goes, and I'm glad you were in there.
You know what's funny? You look about 40 years older there than you do now.
Yeah, I mean,
you were living that road life back then, brother.
I was, man.
The wrong kind of road life.
I was in the bubble, bro.
Cheeseburgers and
the Waffle House.
little slick back hair that's falling out.
No, man, I was buzzing my hair to a one right there, you know? Hadn't seen a gym in ages and just was on the road and just, you know?
Oh, man, look at that. Yeah. Still with the... Looks like Sean's already got color on his nose there.
No, you know what he did the night before? The night before we were walking through that, and he caught himself. That's what that was.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And right
here. Taker with the Aussie
eyeliner.
Yeah.
Right here in this match, and they did it in 26. They were supposed to have a face-off, but then Jerry Briscoe goes, ring the bell. So I went, look at Taker and Sean, look at me. Watch Taker. See?
I didn't do nothing.
Yeah. It was like, we were supposed to have a face-off. But
you can still have a face-off after the bell rings. Yeah.
But they wanted to start off that way. But they did it in 26. If you go back and you look at 26, they started with the face-off in 26. Gotcha. So I actually saved them.
You know, once again, this is really cool for me because I always say this is my favorite match I've ever seen, and I've only seen it once. So to watch it again now,
You know, in 10 years, I've only seen this match maybe four or five times.
Really?
Yeah.
Because this has to be your finest hour in the WWE, right?
Of course. I mean, hands down, you know, when people say, what's your greatest match ever? I always go WrestleMania 25 with Taker and Shawn. Mm-hmm. And they go, what's your second? I go Jericho and Shawn, Great American Bash.
Is that the bloodbath?
Bloodbath, yeah. Bro.
That was a great match.
And, you know, you really helped me out in that, man, because with that match, you actually gave me the confidence that I really needed to become who I became.
As far as because you're in that match.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Sometimes you need a break, right? And that might have just been a random placement, because a lot of times for people that don't know, you'll go really have no say in who your ref is.
No.
Your ref will just be assigned. Unless it's a really big match. Look at that. That's awesome. Shawn taking the big bump on the top. Unless it's a really big match with two big performers, they get to choose their ref just like they chose you for this match.
Yeah. I was chosen for this. And,
you know, see how Taker just like throws you out of the way, but that 1 second of hesitation is what allows Shawn to take over again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? That right there was just on the fly, dude. It wasn't anything that we said, okay, he was going to fake. It was just,
yeah,
you just did it.
Just did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to plan stuff like that. That's the reason we talk about when you have a referee who knows what to do and what not to do and where to be, you don't have to call that beforehand.
No.
You know, just work with me, Marty. Work with me. Stay with me. Come over here. Do this. Do that.
Absolutely.
Because when you're in there in a match like this with a guy that you trust, you're calling to each other. A lot of times I'll call spots to you to tell, you know, Taker, for example, if he's on the other side of the ring and I can't get there, I can't yell it out. Marty, go tell him to stand up or whatever.
Yeah, tell him to feed in, tell him to shoot or
exactly.
Whatever. You know, and in between right here, you know, I'm just jaw-jacking because they're telling a story right there. And that's the thing that I tell referees today. I mean, you know, when you got guys like that in the corner, you know, give them a count, but don't sit there and just pull out the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Guys do that way too often because you're going to kill somebody's heat. You're going to kill somebody's spot in the story.
Look at that backdrop. How tall is Taker? 6'10"?
6'10".
So, Stan, that's about a 7.5-foot backdrop. Yeah.
Dude, when he hits him with the last stride later on in this match, dude, I mean, he was literally 20 feet in the air. Look at that. Too,
once again, Shawn, Taker not really known for being a power guy, but just gorilla presses Shawn. Yeah. Shawn was so good. I love watching this because you don't forget. Obviously, to me, Shawn's my favorite wrestler of all time.
Yeah.
But when you actually watch it, it's like watching a Dean Malenko match or an Eddie match. Like, these guys were so good, but you forget because you don't watch it in a while, you know?
Yeah. And it's amazing, you know, that when you're in this situation like this, you know, it's like instinct just takes over and just everything that you've learned, everything that you practice comes into play, man. Mm. And you just got to be the best that you are.
Well, and when you get to this level, too, you're talking these guys have been doing this probably at this point in time, 25 years each.
Yeah.
20 years as legit headliners. It's so much instinct and just knowing what to do.
Yeah. Knowing the crowd, knowing positioning, knowing the subtle movements, the selling and things like that. And what really is awesome in this match, too, that with the false finishes and things that we did later on in this match, this was the first time that Taker ever showed any type of emotion in a match.
In what way?
Where Shawn kicked out.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it. I remember that. Like getting physical and like,
I think that's one of the reasons why I loved it is just the facials in this are so great as well. You know, another thing that just makes good workers great, like the little bits of selling, a little bit of facials. You know, we had a show the other night in Jacksonville and it was Shima and Kenny Omega, and Shima hit Kenny with like a knee from the top rope, and then went to do it again. And as he was going, Kenny was like, "Please don't do it," like a serial killer. Like, don't. He can't get up. He's still putting his hands up. People don't do that. They just sit there and take it all the time. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, and it's like, if you were doing that for real, would you really be?
Yeah,
would your hands really be down? Yeah.
You'd be covering up. Like,
absolutely.
Please don't do this. Absolutely. I always love, of course, he's doing the figure four.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he might have been going for the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Which, of course, anytime it's, it's a dig on Brett.
Oh, my God. He screwed Brett.
Yeah. who are the other referees in the company at this point in time?
Mike Chioda, Charles Robinson, Jack Doan, John Cone. Scotty Armstrong. And I believe Goose Mahoney was here at this time. Yeah.
Is there like when you're in a group of referees, is there a quote unquote head referee, or all you guys kind of on
Mike
the same?
Chioda.
And what does that entail?
He'll make assignments. He'll
assign the refs.
He'll assign the matches. But from what I've been told now, you know, that comes from the office now,
gotcha.
Which is odd, you know. But at this time, like for WrestleManias and things of that nature, it was Johnny who was making the assignments.
Okay.
And oddly enough, I didn't have this match. Charles Robinson had this match. Yeah. And it turned into a little, you know, resentment. But, you know, I apologize to Charles because Sean's the one who asked me. You know,
why are you apologizing? You're not in charge.
Yeah. And, but, you know, we about 3 weeks before this, we had a meeting. They gave out the assignments. Charles was there. And we happened to be in San Antonio, Texas. And I told Sean very nonchalantly, I mean, I said, hey, I don't have your match, dude. Because WrestleMania was coming up. He's like, you don't? I said, no. And he goes, all right, cool. So Corpus Christi, when we did that Taker thing, when he came
white,
up. Yeah, he pulled me aside and he goes, hey, he goes, you got my match. I talked to John. And I went, okay. And a day before WrestleMania, I got pulled aside and I got spoken to that I needed to go change it and put Charles back into the match.
Spoken to by one of the referees?
A few of them.
Gotcha.
And, you know, they didn't like the fact that, you know, that Charles was taken out and I was put in. And but, you know, I said, if you guys want to change it, go talk to Sean.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what I told
like,
him.
It's not like you're politicking for the job and wheezing. If they don't want you in there, guess what? You can politic your ass. It's not going to get in there.
Absolutely.
What match did you originally have?
I had the dark match with Morrison and the Colognes.
And so what match did Charles get moved to?
The dark Colognes and dark match. Sorry, Charles.
I can see Charles's issue with that one.
Yeah.
I wonder who had the main event that night. If it was probably Kyoto with Triple H.
No, it was Scotty Armstrong.
Oh, okay.
It was Scotty.
So
Armstrong.
Kyoto have Big Show.
Big Show and gotcha. Cena and Edge is what he had.
Scotty Armstrong now is a timekeeper in the gorilla position. He times the shows. Or yeah. No, is he an agent now?
He's
no,
an agent.
He's
now.
An agent. That's right. Yeah, he's an agent he was. Now. But Kidman is now the yeah. timer, and Scotty's an agent. So
yeah,
there's a crossface, but Taker's turning, so it's more of a that would actually not hurt you.
That's
at all.
That's a great shot
point.
Right there. Look at that WrestleMania baby.
Whenever you see the expansiveness of the WrestleMania set, it always just makes you realize how huge it is. You know.
You know, I mean, the entrance. I mean, just that rampway was like 5 miles long, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sure guys got blown up just coming.
Well, that's
down.
One thing I always hate. It's like, okay, you got 30 minutes. Okay, well, that's 6 minutes for entrances because it takes 2.5 to walk down the damn thing.
Yeah. And this was cool too because Taker was actually selling, and then boom, goes back, rolls him through. 1-2. And
like, when's the last time you saw Taker do a roll up?
Exactly.
You know. See, but that's a smart move for the course of the match. If you're talking 30 minutes, 30 minutes is a long time
yeah,
for a match. So you have to have ebbs and flows. And the way they're doing this, it's really, you know, Sean's kind of slowed it down, but it's with a legit
hold
finishing move yeah. that's won championships every time. But Chris Benoit used yeah. it. So people who know WWE know that is, I think, as a matter of fact, Sean might have lost to that very move at WrestleMania 20 in
Madison
Square Garden. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, because that was Benoit and Triple H when Benoit beat them.
Against Shawn, yeah, three-way.
Yeah, three-way.
See, that's another thing. It's the same thing with Kane. Like, you forget how big they are because we see them all the time, but watch them on screen, and when they do things like a backdrop or that side slam Taker did, if he's standing up and he's got you up, that's a good 4-foot drop straight down. And, you know, guys, we know how to bump and this and that. That still hurts. It's a real earth shaker where it puts all your...
Yeah, and
puts your back in line.
And the thing is, too, you know, I helped build that ring, and these rings are made out of beams and wood planks, man.
So you were doing the ring at this point?
Absolutely.
Time as well?
I was doing the rings there. I helped build that ring.
So quickly explain, what exactly is it? What is the mat made of? Go from the, is it a...
You have a frame. And
steel,
then you,
steel frame.
Steel frame, and then you have beams. You have 12 beams, 8 go one way, 4 go the other way, and then you put your wood planks that go. You have 13 planks that go side by side. And then from there, you have foam, which is about 1.5, 2 inches that you put on top of that. Then you put canvas, tie that down, and then you put your ropes up, and then you start tightening in.
Okay, so there you go. I always love when people get in there and think it's going to be a big trampoline. The iron slats, wood, and an inch of foam.
Yes.
Go crazy.
Exactly.
Go have fun with that.
Mm-hmm.
See how it works out for you.
Yeah. And I always laugh when people use the F word, too.
What's the F word?
Fake.
Oh, I know. I hate that too. As a matter of fact, I just called it the F word earlier today. fake is never a word I like because show business, yes, but nothing. Look at that little thing sticking on the back of Sean's head, his little ponytail.
Yeah. He's selling, going,
yeah,
building it up and stuff.
It's a little handle.
Yeah. And it was great because in one of these elbows, he catches Taker and he tells me, he goes, "Tell him I'm sorry." No, he caught him right there.
There you go.
Yeah, it's later on. He catches him and he says, "Tell him I'm sorry."
Listen to the crowd. So into it. That's another thing I was going to say too, is that did he super kick him in the...
No, he went for it. Taker came down.
Oh, and it's the Gogo Plata.
Yeah.
See, once again, you got a move set for both these guys that everybody knows.
And the match could finish at any time. People know it.
That's right. And it's not just the choke slam and the super kick. There's the elbow off the top. There's the nip up. There's the Gogo Plata.
And you see what I'm doing right there? I'm giving them time to sell that. Sean's foot's on the rope, and I'm not sitting there. I'm getting people are buying that, and people are getting invested
You're
in that.
You're pantomiming, too, like showing everybody, look what's going on over here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I want to get that guy in the Stevie Wonder seats to be able to feel what I'm feeling, too.
Stevie Wonder seats being in the last row of the stadium.
Absolutely. With 74,000 people there, I'm sure there was a lot of Stevie Wonder seats.
The good thing is there's also the big Tron on either side where people can see it up close. But still, you got to be animated or else they're just watching. You don't want them just watching the TV.
No.
You want to see what's going on inside the ring, too.
You know, and then when I'm doing my counts right here, doing that, I'll come up. But I'm not getting too close to Taker because that was always a thing with Taker as a referee, that you didn't get too close, but you didn't get too far away either.
Why didn't he not want you too close?
Because you had to respect the character.
Ah, cool.
That's
you get too close, it'll bite your head off.
Absolutely.
That's really cool. What a once again, great little detail from a guy, like I said earlier, that knows his character better than any that ever has. Look at this big man, too. I asked Vince one time, who's the best big man ever? And he said Undertaker.
Yeah.
Not even a second of it. I was thinking is it Bam Bam Bigelow? Is it Vader? Is this guy? And he's, of course, it's Taker. Duh. Yeah. Super agile for such a big guy.
Yeah, he can do anything, man.
Yeah. He just basically did a standing leg drop onto the side of the apron, which, by the way, was back when nobody took bumps on the side of the apron, which in this day and age, everyone wants the bump. I said to Billy the other day, remember back in our day when you tried to stay inside the ring in the soft part? You didn't want to bump too close to the corner because it was the hard part of the ring?
Yeah. It was funny because WWE did that pay-per-view where they had the 50-man battle royal.
Yeah.
And I went, how many guys want to be in that?
Here's Sean going for this giant dive. Oh, jeez. He just did a moonsault from the top to the floor and crashed and burned.
He really screwed up his wrist right there, too.
Did he?
Yeah, he really screwed up his wrist.
He didn't land flat at all.
No,
he landed
didn't.
On the side. I'm sure we'll see a replay. Now, look at you looking at both guys. You don't want to start a count too early because that screws it up. You want them out there to sell.
Mm-hmm.
With your hair buzzed down to a one.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, my God. I look so horrible. God, I look like shit.
Look at this.
Yeah, and he
Olayed
him,
too.
He Olayed him.
He did.
Yeah.
But he's almost doing like a twist or something. Like,
yeah.
He's lucky he didn't bust his shoulder. He landed right on his shoulder on
it. It was funny because I told him afterwards, I said, were you going for a moonsault or a tornado?
Yeah.
He goes, I just went.
I think he knew that Taker was going to move and just kind of psyched himself out.
Yeah.
Although, listen, there's no good way to take that bump.
And, of course, here's selling that. And so, is he up? Yeah, he's up.
Oh, you told him that Taker was up.
Because he asked, he's like, is he up? And I go, yeah, he's up. Okay, stay with me.
Now, here's the story here.
Okay.
Taker's going to do a dive, and the idea was he was supposed to hit the cameraman.
Yes.
Who is Jimmy Snuka's son.
Yes.
Deuce or Domino?
It was
Domino.
Deuce.
Watch this. Watch this dive.
Oh, I got goosebumps seeing that again, dude.
You heard. You heard a crack when the camera drops. I thought that was his neck.
Yeah.
My gosh, that was one of the worst spots. I was watching this backstage with Kid Rock. Ooh. We were sitting there, and both of us did what you and I just did and hugged like little girls, like, no! Embraced each other, like, no! And I was like, Taker, please get up, please get up. Because when I heard that crack of the camera, I thought for sure that it was Taker's neck. Now, conversely, Domino did not catch him.
No.
Domino was never seen in the WWE ring again.
And here's a little insight pulling back the curtain. That dive was originally supposed to be on me.
Wow.
Vince vetoed it the night before.
Oh, yeah. I would have vetoed it, too. And no offense, but you're tiny. Okay, watch this.
So Sean pushes me because he wanted me to have my WrestleMania moment.
Oh, jeez.
He wasn't even anywhere near.
But it's
him,
almost, is it his fault? That's a hard dive to catch. And oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, that's tough to watch, guys.
It is.
I hope you're checking that out with us here on the watch along.
Taker was so out of it, man.
Was he knocked out?
Yeah, he had a concussion. Yeah, he fractured his pinky and his ring finger, and he fractured his collarbone on that.
That guy does not have any luck at WrestleMania. Remember, didn't Brock knock him out the year he lost the strap or the streak, too?
And then right here I'm selling, and I'm starting to sell up more because I have no idea what's going on because when Sean threw me against the barricade.
You didn't see it.
I didn't see it, and my earpiece broke. So I didn't have any, nobody was in my ear.
And the earpiece,
ear
so Sean
point.
Coming over, what's he saying to you right now?
He's saying, sell a little bit more, sell a little bit more. I said, what's wrong with Taker? He's like, come with me, sell it. Keep selling.
So Sean's dragging you over knowing that Taker needs more time. So he's bringing you in the ring with him. Basically manhandling you to tell you what's going on because he knows Taker needs time. Here it is again.
So yeah, there I go.
Oh, you took a hard bump there too.
Oh, he shoot.
Oh, see, yeah. You still hear that microphone crash every time.
Yeah, every time, dude.
That's the worst part.
Yeah, and right here he's telling me to slowly count. He's like, just take your time. He goes, just work with me. I want to make sure he's okay.
Was the spot, if Deuce would have caught him or Domino would have caught him, would the spot supposed to be that he's still selling, right?
Still selling,
he's
yes.
out. But he he's just out. Wasn't supposed to really be hurt.
Yeah. So here, I mean, I'm selling everything and anything right now.
And also, you know that you got to take your time to get to 10 because if you don't, he don't get up.
Absolutely.
That's the one thing about...
And look how far away he is.
Yeah. That's the one thing about New Japan. They have a 20 count.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Sean's face. Please, stay down. I was like, oh, shit. Now I got to keep fighting this guy.
You hear the crowd coming?
Yeah.
Selling that drama, baby.
How did Taker not break his freaking neck on that?
Yeah, I know.
I still can't believe that.
See, I'm selling right there because I was...
Yeah. You are now the focus of this. If you count too quickly, you screw everything up.
Yes.
If you count too slow, you lose the crowd. You
hear them?
Yep. And look at Sean Cell.
Yep. Got him.
Yep. Wow. Even just watching this, the drama, you can just feel it.
Yeah.
And they haven't even gotten started yet.
No.
They still got another 15 minutes to go.
Yeah, we started rolling right here, man. So it was like, okay. And then there's Sean.
Sean's tuned up the band. Mm-hmm. Now as a performer, as one of the guys in the match, this is the fun part.
Yes.
Now when you got the crowd and you know, oh, we got so much good shit coming. Wait till you see this. Oh, it's catch some choke slam. Yeah. Nails it.
Boom.
Look how high Sean goes. Yeah. Sean was so freaking good, man.
Look at the count.
Earl Hebner would be happy.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't too fast there.
Nope.
But that's part of it, too. The count now is part of the drama. You can't
Absolutely.
Waste that.
And you know what? I'm hurt.
Yeah.
I'm selling.
Right. Because you took a wicked bump. They didn't show that. If Taker hadn't taken such a bad fall, I bet you they would have shown a replay of you.
Yeah.
And also, too, this is when refs had names.
Yes.
They don't identify refs anymore.
Because referees are irrelevant.
Yeah, which is so ridiculous because name another sport. Well, football, you don't know the refs' names, I don't think. But
baseball announces referees every game.
Hockey, you know every announcer.
Basketball.
Referee. Yeah.
See, I'm still selling, you know.
And you have to be.
Yeah.
It's as much of a war for you as it is for them. Because that's the thing, too. You got to keep this in mind. In wrestling land, a referee taking a bump like that is the equivalent of a wrestler taking 15 bumps. You're done.
Yeah. See, and here's one of the things. See, I'm checking. Okay, well, are they going to be able to do this? But I don't count until the leg is f-ing hooked, man.
Yeah.
But this is...
You don't count until the shoulders are covered.
Yeah, down or mm-hmm. hooked. See, but I was checking on both of them because...
But just for people watching, the reason why Sean didn't hook the leg is because he's beat up too. So he can barely make the cover. I like what they just did there. Sean just slapped it down.
Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't always have to be a vice grip. That time he was able to beat it away, bat it away because Taker is hurt as well.
And of course, now I'm giving them time because they're selling because he just kicked them with the super kick.
You also know the Jericho rule that I hate. which is the, I hate double counts.
Yes.
The 10 count.
Mm-hmm. What I try and educate people on is that instead of breaking out a double count, a 10 count, check on guys.
Yeah.
Ask them because they may need you.
Right. Or they might need to relay a message.
Yes.
Or what's the time or something like that.
Where are we at? But it's funny because Sean earlier had already told me to stop giving him time cues.
Why?
Because he just didn't want to hear time cues.
He didn't care.
Didn't care.
We're going through this, yep. And that's all there is to it.
Yep.
Really?
Yes.
So is anybody in the back telling anything to you?
My earpiece is gone at this point.
Oh, look at this.
Yeah, see?
Jeez Louise, that's 8 feet.
Easy. Look at this count, baby. Look at the crowd.
Yeah. Listen to him, yeah.
See? Look at his reaction. He'd never done that.
Yeah. He's breaking character. He's human.
Yes. The dead man.
The dead man is alive. So right now, just so people understand, you're supposed to have a earpiece that's giving you cues, letting you know where you're at in the time frame.
Yes.
So you can make your time so it doesn't go over and affect other matches. But you can't hear anything.
I can't hear anything.
So are you looking at Mark Yeaton if you have to?
I'm not looking at anybody. I'm just...
If you had to, though.
If I had to, I would look to Mark Yeaton at
Yeaton
that point.
Yeaton was the timekeeper for 20 years. That would be the best guy. You could always find out where the time was. He would tell you what to do. Another guy, I don't know why they let go of either, but neither here nor there. But
yeah. And, of course, both of them are selling right here, you know, and Sean's down there selling as
best.
What's
Taker going to do? What's he going for?
He's going for an elbow.
Oh, I get it. The exchanging moves.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he's ever done this before. Oh, okay, he just did the back bump.
Yeah.
You just hear those big bumps in the ring, and it's like it surprised me sometimes. It doesn't really just snap.
Yeah. See? Checking on him.
But also, too, here's another thing. Once again, when two guys are down, you're the animated guy that has to provide some motion in the ring, or else it's just a still picture.
Yeah, absolutely. See, and as I'm counting, I'm checking on him. Because they could be looking up at me. They could be relaying something.
Yeah.
I'm hurt. And I'm still selling what happened to me earlier. I'm still kind of...
As you should.
But... The thing, Chris, that I see a lot, even at WWE and whatever, I mean, guys don't do that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, I don't think guys take pride in what they do.
Well, I would say the same with some of the wrestlers sometimes. You forget what you've done 5 minutes earlier when it could have been.
Now, this skin the cat. Now, this false finish for me was everything that I had worked for up until that point.
Okay, so Sean skins the cat back in the ring. Taker grabs him with, that's awesome, grabs him with a tombstone. Nails him out of that's a great spot. Now you come down. 1, 2. Now why is that what you work for?
Because look at that emotion on Taker's face. That crowd of 74,000 people counted with me and just didn't see it coming.
That must be a pretty cool rush having people count along with your count.
Oh, absolutely.
I never thought about that before.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know? And that was everything for me because all the hard work to be in that moment right there at WrestleMania with these two guys.
And also, he's been tombstoned. This is the finish. How in the hell did he get out of that?
Absolutely.
Now, that also shows how big of a deal this match is for Taker to allow that to happen because I can't recall people kicking out of both of his finishes in the past.
Not at all.
This is why it's a classic match.
And look at Sean selling.
Sean told me when we were working, I learned a lot. He goes, you just lie there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't move till I move. It's too long. It's not too long. It's never too long.
Nope.
Never too long. Just don't move until I tell you.
Yeah.
Sit there for, you know, you feel like 5 minutes. Then you'd be like, okay, I get it. They're still going nuts. And then they go down and they come back up in another wave and then another wave.
So he's still down. And then right now when Sean hits him with that DDT, you don't see that coming.
And once again, too, Taker has not sliced his throat yet. So every little thing, you still haven't seen that.
Mm-mm.
He's still pulling out these well-known tricks that they haven't seen yet. So people go, okay, now this time, it's ending for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Taker gave the signal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Look at Sean, dead, limp. Look at that.
Hard to pick him up. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't even remember what happened. So he picks him up. Oh. More of a shoulder breaker, but that's fine. That's one of those ones where nerds go, his head missed by 6 inches.
Yeah.
It's not the point.
Oh my God, it didn't land correctly.
Yeah. He heard his, he just shut up.
Yeah. Get in there and do it.
They'll get it from a different angle.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's like He gave him like a neck breaker over his hip, basically. So he didn't DDT him, but still, that could hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Hip bones are pretty strong. Now look for Sean. He's going for the elbow.
Yep, and look at him selling the whole way, man.
And this is the beauty about him having a move that's a trademark in the ring and a move that's a trademark from the top. You could take an hour to climb up there because everyone's terrified that Taker's going to get up. Oh, so make it up in time, yeah.
And look at Taker still lying there.
Yep. But as a fan, you're like, quick before he gets up, or Taker, get up before he gets to the top.
Yep.
It's the perfect place.
And Sean's struggling, and he's, you know.
Yeah.
See, look at the shake in the room.
Can I make it? Can I do it?
Look at, you kind of did the teeny tiny thing.
Oh, he
right there.
It. Yeah.
That's where he caught him. And right now when I go check on him, he's like, tell him I'm sorry.
Well, hit him in the face with his elbow.
I went to go tell Taker. Sean said he's sorry.
And probably Taker probably didn't even feel anything, you know?
No. Didn't even sell it.
Stiff shots keep you awake.
See, and Taker, I mean, he just moved his leg.
Meaning? Hmm? How do you mean?
He still had moved.
Oh, gotcha. He's still down and out.
Yeah, he's still down and out. Look at that. And then Sean, still selling like a mofo and tuning up the band, dude.
Yeah. It's so funny how thrown away super kicks are nowadays. Oh, back here, this was the move.
Yes.
Now you see five of these every match.
And people are kicking out.
Or not even getting covered. Yeah. Look at, oh.
That was a
made
good
that
one,
sound
too.
Right. Yeah. It's exactly what it needed to be. Mm-hmm.
And look at him struggling to get it. Yeah. Look at that. Getting the leg.
Here comes Big Marty. Come on.
Look at the crowd. Dude, you got him.
Yeah. Are you ever worried that the guy's not going to put his shoulder up and you're going to pull off anyways? Because you can't tell me that you would have enough instinct to cover, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, with guys like yourself and Taker and Sean and all that, I really don't sweat that.
Yeah.
With other guys that I've worked with, I mean, have I worried about it? Yeah. Have I counted people out? Yeah. Because it's like, dude, you're not going to shit on me.
But aren't you told that, though, if a guy doesn't get his shoulder up,
absolutely,
count on the street?
Absolutely.
Like, that's a Vince rule, right?
That's a Vince rule. You know, if they're not kicking out, count them.
Gotcha.
Even on the outside, if guys aren't getting in,
count them out. Yep. Now, obviously, things are a little different in a big, giant match like this. But if you're talking about, you know, the third match on the show, sorry, buddy.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love this, too. They're just using each other to stand up.
See, and I'm still selling from what happened earlier. Yeah, this was great, the exchange when they were throwing bombs at each other.
Taker's got great punches.
See, look, his hands are up.
Yeah, like a boxer.
Yeah.
Like they would be. Sean's got great punches, too. These are some old school Texas brothers here showing their territorial tutorials that they learned back when they were teenagers, probably.
Probably working that area right there, too, when the territories were
Houston,
there.
Yeah, Houston, yeah. I think Taker was Dallas and Sean was obviously San Antonio, Kansas City, but.
See, and nobody, at this point, nobody knew who was going to win.
I was just going to say the same thing. Nobody knows what to expect. And also, how? We've seen super kicks and choke slams and tombstones and elbows and.
The last ride.
Every last ride, Goga Plata, everything.
Yep. So, see, look at the crowd. They're just. You just don't know.
Yeah. The drama's just amazing. Another thing I was going to say, too, is even though Sean is probably, I don't know, almost a foot shorter than Taker, you don't even notice it in this match at this point. It's put together so well. It's not big guy, little guy. It's just two guys beating the crap out of each other. And also not beating the crap out of each other. It's not like one of those New Japan matches where they're hitting each other in the face with those forearms back and forth or headbutts. They're just having a match. A match which is designed to put both guys over and not hurt each other, which is what wrestling is supposed to be.
Yeah. And they're telling a story. They told a story. I mean, the way that both of them sold in this match and the way that their facials, their body language, I mean, just everything just told the story.
Well, the story that I'm getting is that, here we go. So there's a moonsault.
So that's the one he couldn't hit.
Perfect. Couldn't have nailed it any better.
Mm-hmm.
He came across not super fast. Brilliant. Brilliant. What a finish, eh? Jeez Louise, man.
Yeah. And
also, too, let me just throw this out as well. We haven't mentioned yet. The call of Jim Ross.
Yeah.
A Jim Ross for a match that's a big match is the best big match caller.
Absolutely.
If it's a low-level match, Jim might get a little whatever. But for a match like this, on the top of his game.
Yeah, you know, it was great. I mean, listening to this afterwards, Ross says it a little afterwards. He goes, oh, my God, I think I just saw heaven. And I go, wow, you know, for Jim Ross to say that and for me to be a part of that match, I mean, it's like, man. And what was great, at the after party, Cowboy Bill Watts was there. And I went up and I introduced myself to him. And Cowboy goes, you were the referee for that Undertaker match this evening, weren't you? And I said, yes, sir, I was. And he goes, you did a great job in there. He goes, without you, that match wouldn't have been what it was. And JR is standing right there at the bar. And he goes, oh, my God, Marty, I'm getting goosebumps, dude. Look at that.
Yeah.
He says, for you to get a compliment from the Cowboy like that, that's rare. Mm. You better take it.
Well, he's a huge Watts fan, too.
And I was like, holy schmoly. So, yeah, it was great.
So what are you feeling right now?
Well, when I see stuff like this, it's like, all right, I don't have a job in WWE.
Say it one more time, sorry.
I said, oh, I don't have a job in WWE. Even though I worked the greatest match in WrestleMania history, I don't have a match there. Or I don't have a job there.
How much longer was it that you were in the company?
July.
And this is April?
This is April.
So, and we'll get to that in a second, but I still want to stay with the match for a bit. So 3 months later, unbelievable, but we'll get to that.
Absolutely.
So you're feeling like you're obviously a part of it. In Mexico City, as you know, when there's a great match, they throw money into the ring.
Yes.
And when you take the money back, you count it. And if you're in a six man, you divide it by seven guys,
yes,
including the referee.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it's a single match, you divide it with, you earned your money thrown in.
Yes.
What did Taker and so we'll watch the replays. When you go to the back, obviously, mm-hmm, probably Sean's get carted out or whatever. When you guys get through Gorilla, are you going back to the Gorilla, or did you have to walk around?
No, Sean and I walked around because Taker's doing his 17-0, and that me and Shaker went to, me and Sean went to the side of the ramp and outside of the stage. And as we came through the side, everybody was standing by the monitors. And as Sean and I walked through, Shane Helms, Hurricane, was standing there. And Sean and I are coming, you know, back together. And he stops us and he goes, hold on, y'all. And we're like, uh-huh. He goes, my God. He goes, man, if there's a motherfucking Mercy Rule in wrestling, they better throw that motherfucking towel in right now, because ain't nobody going to follow that.
Like Hurricane talk like he's from the woods.
Yeah. And then we started heading into the trainer's room, and Cody stops me, and he goes, oh, my God, that was incredible.
Mm.
That was insane. So Sean and I walked into the trainer's room. And then about 5 minutes later, Taker comes in, and they're literally carting him in. And Vince comes in, Michael Hayes and Pat Patterson, because he's still f***ed up right here.
So he's still out of it.
Oh, he's still out of it.
Wow, Taker's still out of it.
So
wow.
Taker goes into the training room with Chris Brennan and stuff, and he just falls flat on the table, dude. Just falls, literally just falls. And we're all in there and stuff. And Vince comes running in, and he says, are you okay, Mark? And Taker's still loopy and stuff. And then about 30 seconds later, Triple H comes in, barges in. He's got the title. And he goes, boom, he throws it down on the floor. And he goes, how the fuck am I going to follow that? I can't go out there now.
Yeah.
And we're like, sorry.
So what did the guys say to you? What did Taker and Sean, anything you recall?
Yeah. Sean thanked me for being in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, you know, he was glad that I was in there because you know, really knew that I would be a part of it and I would really want to be there. And then Taker thanked me the next day in Austin. It was funny because instinct just told me, you know, just like our Great American Bash in 2008, the blood one, something just told me the next day to get my referee jersey signed. And I remember the next day after our bash one in New York, I had you and Sean sign it. It was all full of blood.
Mm.
And I said something, and to have it signed like that day, you know, fresh blood stains on it and everything else. I mean, it's still, it's a big piece of history, man.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next day in Austin, Texas, I had Taker sign my referee jersey. I said, can you sign this? And he's like, absolutely. And he's signing my jersey. And he looks at me and he goes, you know, Marty, he goes, I'd have been better off if you'd have caught me. And I said, I'd have caught you. And he goes, well, I guess we'll never know. But I'm sure, you know, that if they did the 26th one, I'm sure that I would have been in that one too. But, you know, as fate would have it, you know, I wasn't part of the company. And, you know.
Did you talk to Vince at all after the, did he say anything? Or does Vince ever give any compliments to a ref? Unless it's a specific bump or something?
No, I mean, when we were all in there after the fact, Vince just came in and he says, is everything okay? And I said, yeah, everything's great. He goes, okay. He's like, thank you. Shane thanked me. Shane was in there too. And Shane's like, oh, that was great, man. That was great. You know, thanks for being in there. And I'm like, dude, you know, no worries. I mean, it was an honor to be in there. And at that point, I mean, none of us knew what that match was going to be. I mean, we did it. And then, you know, people.
You never know, right?
You just never know. You just never
even
know.
Even when you're done, you come out of there. And when you're done. Some days you feel like it's just another day at the office.
Yeah. But, you know, I will say this, that being in that match, you could feel it. And you just knew that the stars and the moons and everything were aligned that night. Because, I mean, looking at it, I mean, it was perfect. And Sean has said that to me. Taker told that to me in November, you know, that was perfect. I mean, if they could call one of their matches perfect, that was the match that was perfect that would really define their careers. And, you know, knowing, you know, that I'm a part of that and I'll always be a part of that no matter what, I mean, it was great. And I got a Slammy for that too. Match of the year, yeah. Got a Slammy for that.
Did they let you keep it?
Yeah, I got it.
I had to give mine back after I won it. So at least you got that.
But you know, it was cool. Sean actually sent it to me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, Sean sent it to me, and it was great. You know, I mean, you know, because when you look at it, I mean, after the fact, I mean, when I get questioned and people meet me or whatever, you know, they say, "Hey, man, what's your favorite match of all time?" WrestleMania 25.
So, what led to the circumstances you keep alluding to it that had you go 3 months later? If that's something you want to talk about.
Absolutely. I've never really shared it with people. I mean, I have once in a while privately and everything. And I know you and I have had discussions about this, but in a nutshell, I was let go because I violated the company dress code, WWE dress code. I wore a KISS t-shirt and I denied wearing a KISS t-shirt. And I got to the building. Unbeknownst to me, Johnny Ace and Kevin Dunn had seen me in a limo when they were waiting for Vince. Kevin Dunn told Johnny that I was out of dress code. So I went to the building and I was doing my stooge duty where I had to check everybody in. And
you have to make sure everybody gets there on time, like curfew and
stuff. Yeah. So, you know, there's always a call time. So referees are always delegated that shitty task. And I went into catering and Johnny and Kevin and Mark Caron were sitting at a table and Johnny seen me and he goes, Marty, what the fuck you doing wearing a KISS t-shirt? And I said, well, I'm sorry. I just put it on. And of course, he caught me off guard because here you got Kevin Dunn, you got Mark Carano and him sitting at a table. And I'm walking in, you know, business as usual, not figuring anything. And he goes, don't you know we got a f-ing dress code? And I go, yeah, I understand that. Why the fuck you wearing a KISS t-shirt? And I said, I just put it on, John. I'm sorry. I'll go change right now. And he says, well, God damn it, go change.
Well, why were you wearing a KISS shirt?
Because it was the last shirt that I had that was clean. You know, when you're on a loop and you're out on the road and stuff, you know, your shirts or whatever, you know, you're having a good time or you're, you know,
so you wore a KISS shirt to the venue.
Yes.
And you were going to change to your ref stuff?
Ref stuff.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Or just stuff that I always put on a WWE shirt or shorts and then went out and walked through my matches.
Gotcha.
Or had to be there for rehearsals and stuff. But it was the only shirt that I had, and I was wearing slacks with a KISS t-shirt. I was waiting in valet at the Marriott in Washington, D.C., and I remember it vividly. And I got a call, and I remember Carano telling me, hey, Johnny needs to talk to you. So I called Johnny, and Johnny goes, I got to let you go. What? I got to let you go. Why? Budget. Okay. And then, you know, of course, after the fact, you know, you hear shit. But, you know, the thing that really kills me, too, is, you know, it's been 10 years. I mean, you know, did I really commit a sin that was unforgivable? You know, and I honestly feel right now with WWE, and I'll say this to them now because I'm sure people will hear that, I have a persona non grata status with them. Don't know why. Do I really give a f-? No. You know, because I'm
persona non grata, meaning like if you show up at the
venue. Yeah, if I show up, I get kicked out.
Really? Have you been kicked out before?
I've been kicked out, you know, because I actually went to SummerSlam afterwards, and Ty Bailey at the time, who's a piece of shit, and I'll say that on air, had me kicked out, you know. And the thing is, you know, they always say, oh, family, you know, you're always there and whatever and this and that, you know. I mean, you know, I
do you think it might have had something to do stemming from what you just said earlier about some other refs coming up and telling you that you were in the wrong for Sean basically putting you in the match and taking somebody else out?
Absolutely. And, you know, I always got shit because of the fact that you and I were friends.
Right.
Sean and I were friends.
Right.
We rode together. You know, like, who the fuck is this lowly referee riding with top guys?
Mm.
You know, like, that was almost like
trying
taboo.
To suck ass.
Suck ass. And oh, my God. And a lot of people. I know John Laurinaitis, for a fact, was really insecure because he felt, you know, that I would get into Sean's ear and tell Sean this or what, just because we were friends, you know. But I've never looked at that shit, I mean, that way, you know. Guys are my friends. You're my friend because we have shit in common.
Right.
We love music. We talk about family.
We have similar personalities. Interests. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, so it's never been a thing where I've gone, hey, Chris, can-. I mean, it's never been like that, dude. I mean, even with Sean, it was never, hey, man, it was never like that, you know. And, you know, we all know how insecure the wrestling community is, and people.
Did you talk to him at all when you got let go? Did you reach out to him?
Yeah, I called him and I told him what went down, and I actually called Hunter, and Hunter goes, well, I guess we'll see you around. And I went, okay, cool. And, you know, have I reached out through the years? Yeah, I've reached out, but, you know, obviously, you know, they never have anything, which is bullshit.
Creator's got nothing for you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or, you know, they've hired 10,000 refs since I've been gone. And
I wonder if it was a kind of a war at the time, too. Not a war, but like if Kevin Dunn's telling Johnny Ace, don't you have control over your guys? You know, you don't have, because I heard it was like, you don't have any, you know, nuts at all if you don't fire him for that.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes a political war, right?
Yeah. And you know, I'm sure Johnny was scared of Kevin and didn't want to have heat with Kevin. And I get it. But, you know, like I said, it's been 10 years. With all the shit that I've done since then, Lucha Underground, Mexico, Japan, Glow. I mean,
now TV, you're working production, for Vince Neil,
working for Vince Slaughter.
Neil, Slaughter.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, really, guys, you can't use a guy like me with my background doing all the shit in Lucha Underground, getting all the extras, getting people gigs, getting people, you know, brought in. I mean, dealing with all the rings, production setup, sitting in creative. I mean, it's like, I'm more than just a lowly fucking referee, and I never wanted to become a victim to the wrestling business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that you taught me a long time ago, dude. When we would ride, you would always tell me, you know, there's more to life than wrestling, and you can do whatever the fuck you want to do. And I go do it.
Yeah, and you have to, because if you're caught under the thumb and always wishing and wanting, you'll never live your life. And look at all the cool stuff you've done since then.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, life goes on, and, you know,
if they called you, would you go back?
I would have to discuss it, and I would have to see what it was. I mean, right now, I got a lot of shit going on.
Yeah.
I mean.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And it's all good stuff,
right,
too.
Right now, I have some conversations with people, you know. Would I like to talk to AEW more? Absolutely. You know, I love what's going on there. You know, I know Del Rio and Chavo got their stuff going down in Mexico City, Nación Lucha Libre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe have a conversation with those guys, too. WWE. You know, if they ever want to talk, and I've reached out to Hunter, but he and I have scheduled things, but, you know, he's so damn busy, you know, it's like, okay. Whatever.
Well, the bottom line is this, once again, one of the three guys in the ring for the greatest match that I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
And watching it again, just amazing and really cool to hear your perspective on that. Because even me, I've never really sat down with the ref, with you, with anybody and said, like, what are you guys doing during this or that and the other thing? So, very, very cool to
thank you.
To chat
I really appreciate it, Chris. And, you know, you and I are boys, and
Batito.
It's funny because you know, I never ask you to sign shit or anything like that. You know, but I just want to mention this, that you and I, where we're at, it's. I remember the first time I ever asked you to sign a book, you just grabbed it from me, and I didn't even ask you. You just grabbed the book, and you signed it, and I didn't even look at it. I took it home, put it away, and about a week later, I pulled out the book because I wanted to read it, and the inscription was "Chupa mi verga."
And we'll let you guys Google it to find out what that means.
Exactly.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it, bud.